warning for this episode of The Craft. This material discusses the topic of suicide and suicidal ideation. For YouTube purposes, we will be referring to it as sewer slide. Please be advised. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Flesh and Blood and Bone podcast. I am filmmaker Kira Gardner, and I am here with my special effects makeup artist dad, Tony Gardner.
I am Tony Gardner.
And thank you for coming back to another episode. We had a little bit of a hiatus last month. We did the Kickstarter for my upcoming feature film, Slay, which was amazing. And we made our goal. So if you liked, watched, interact with our content, or donated, thank you so, so much. Unfortunately, I hit exhaustion and I got so sick after the Kickstarter. So we had to take a little bit of a break because I could not speak.
A little personal time.
Yeah, we had to take a little TLC. Yes, but we're back and we're here today to talk about my dad's work on the 1996 film The Craft. Give us a quick sentence of like all the little things you had to do real fast.
Weird props from sharks to prosthetic makeups that were imaginary burns, and we had hair falling out on people. Somebody unalives themselves, all sorts of stuff. It was very fun.
I'm going to bring back something I used to do in previous episodes, which is I'm going to recap the movie if you haven't seen it so that you can follow along with what we're sharing. So this is the 1996 film, The Craft. If you would like to skip the recap, fast forward to about 10 minutes into the episode. The Craft is a 1996 American teen supernatural horror film directed by Andrew Fleming. We open the movie with Sarah Bailey, played by Robin Tunney, who has just moved to Los Angeles with her dad and stepmom for a fresh start. She's transferred to a new Catholic high school after a mysterious past, which we later find out included a sewer slide attempt. On her first day at school, she catches the attention of Bonnie, played by Neve Campbell, in their French class when Sarah shows an unexplained ability to make her pencil stand on its tip without touching it. Bonnie is a part of trio of girlfriends, Nancy Downs, played by Faruza Balk, and Rochelle Zimmerman, played by Rachel True, all of which are outsiders in school believed to dabble in witchcraft. Bonnie tells the other girls about Sarah, believing they have found their fourth member of the group that they need to complete their coven and truly tap into their powers. Chris Hooker, played by Skeet Ulrich, introduces himself to Sarah at lunch. He warns her that the three girls are witches and invites her to watch him at football practice later. On her walk home from school, Sarah stops to watch the football practice, but then is interrupted by Nancy, Bonnie, and Rochelle. They ask her to hang out with them and do some shopping. On the way, the trio learns of Sarah's previous sewer slide attempt, which becomes important information later on, but doing it in a very 90s, weirdly casual way about it, giving us this interesting dialogue.
I slit my wrist.
Sorry.
What'd you do it with?
With a kitchen knife.
You even did it the right way.
Punk rock, let's go.
The girls stop into a magic shop where the trio steals some merchandise while Sarah pays for some candles and a book called The Craft that the shop owner recommends. She tells Sarah that she is a natural witch. The four girls escape to their hangout spot where Nancy tells Sarah about Manon. Neither the god or devil, but both. Sort of like something to describe the universe. The trees, the ground, the earth, all is Manon. Sarah gets a little spooked and goes to hang out with Chris instead. The two only kiss, but in true 90s dickhead fashion, he tells the entire school that the two hooked up the next day. After that, the girls start bonding together and forming their coven in earnest. We learn what each girl is struggling with, respectively. Rochelle, the only black girl of the group, and maybe even the school, despite the film taking place in LA, is bullied by Laura, played by Christine Taylor, who is a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, vain racist. We learn that Bonnie's character is in ongoing experimental treatments for burn scars she has on her body that she constantly covers up. And then we learn that Nancy lives in poverty with her single mom and an abusive stepdad. The next day, the four girls ditch school and really start their coven, giving us this iconic line from the film.
Girls, watch out for those weirdos.
We are the weirdos, mister.
They invoke the four corners of earth, air, fire, and water, which represents each girl's element. Nancy is air, Bonnie is fire, Rochelle is water, and Sarah is earth. They cast a spell together that reflects their personal struggles. Nancy wants power and escape, Bonnie wants to feel beautiful and heal her scars, Rochelle wants revenge on her racist bully, and Sarah wants love and control over Chris, who lied about her. We see that their spell actually worked. Bonnie's scars miraculously vanish, and she has what all of us teenage girlies wish we had, our own movie moment walking into class feeling like a new badass bitch from whatever silly little thing we were led to believe to be insecure about. Rochelle's spell makes her bully Laura's hair begin to fall out so badly it's as if she had accidentally put Nair all over her head instead of her legs. In a fit of rage, Nancy screams in her home, causing her abusive stepfather to have a heart attack and die. Unbeknownst to Nancy and her mom, he had a very pricey life insurance coverage, and the two inherit $175,000, which, accounting for inflation, would be about $376,000 today. Although Nancy's mom oddly goes right to getting a high-rise LA apartment, which most likely would have cost a few thousand dollars per month, I'm guessing. I'm not sure. I wasn't even born here yet, but all I could think about was saving that money, girl, and they did not. Sarah's spell works like a seductive charm, and Chris not only falls in love with her, but starts becoming obsessed with her. The girls return to the magic shop, and Sarah asks the shopkeeper about undoing her spell. The shopkeeper says there is no undoing. Once a force is unleashed, there is no stopping it. She warns the girls that whatever is sent out is received back times three. Nancy, now growing more power hungry, buys a book called The Invocation of the Spirit. The four girls go to the beach that night to perform an invocation ritual calling upon mana to intensify their powers. After the spell, they fall asleep. Sarah, Bonnie, and Rochelle wake up to see Nancy literally walking on water and that a bunch of dead sharks, a practical effect brought to you by my dad and his team, have washed up on the beach. Nancy gets a little weird here and starts calling them her gifts and that she feels mana inside of her. Seeing Nancy's odd behavior, Sarah begins to worry that everyone is going too far, especially Nancy, which of course Nancy hates. Feeling a little isolated from the girl power hungry group, Sarah hangs out with Chris. It quickly becomes very uncomfortable as Chris tries to have sex with her, but Sarah refuses. She runs away and somehow in Los Angeles is able to run all the way to Rochelle's house without calling a cab. Upset, Sarah shares this with the group what happened between her and Chris. Pissed off and maybe for some reason jealous of Sarah, Nancy goes and finds the party that Chris is at. In a turn of events, she uses her powers to make herself look like Sarah, an amazing visual effect for this time that is pulled off really well, and she seduces Chris. Sarah runs in and Chris realizes that the girls actually are witches. In a heated exchange, Nancy grows angry and gives us another iconic line from the film here.
Jealous? Jealous? You don't even exist to me!
She then screams at Chris and her powers push him out the window to his death. Sarah is heartbroken. She stays away from the girls and tries to perform a binding spell on Nancy on her own, attempting to force Nancy to be unable to do harm to herself or others. But nothing happens, and instead the three girls appear in Sarah's dreams, scaring her. The next day at school, the trio confronts Sarah, and Nancy warns her that in older times, a coven would kill anyone who went back on them. Worried, Sarah goes back to the magic shop to seek help. The shop owner leads Sarah to a mysterious back portion of the shop and informs Sarah that her own mother was actually a witch as well. And in order to help herself, Sarah must invoke the spirit. In a weird sequence of events, the shopkeeper tries to tell her, but then Nancy's presence is felt, and a non-explosion, maybe a vision of an explosion, occurs. Spooked, Sarah runs home only to find the news on the TV saying her father has died in a plane crash. The house is filled with snakes, cockroaches, maggots, you name it. Everywhere Sarah goes, it is covered in bugs and snakes, and she hides in the upstairs bathroom shower where Nancy appears, saying she should unalive herself. Sarah runs back down stairs where the three girls float and try to intimidate her, even going as far as writing a suicide note for her and Nancy slashing Sarah's wrists. This movie gets freaking dark. Sarah runs back upstairs and she invokes the spirit. She chants, "By the powers of three, make them see, make them see." Bonnie and Rochelle go upstairs to get Sarah, but see themselves in the mirror, their reflections experiencing their own spells backfired times three. Bonnie's face has burn scars all over it and Rochelle's hair is falling out. They see themselves in the mirror, freak out, and run out of the house. Eventually, Nancy comes upstairs and Sarah makes her envision cockroaches and snakes. Nancy's fingers and hair turn into snakes and her mouth fills with bugs. Freaked out by this, Nancy actually apologizes, but Sarah sees through her fakeness and the two get into a full-on witch brawl, which eventually ends up with Nancy crashing into a mirror, the glass shattering over her. We then cut in time and see Sarah unpacking her dad's car. Bonnie and Rochelle walk up and try to apologize to Sarah, saying that making her think her dad died and trying to make Sarah kill herself was all just a joke. Weird freaking joke, you guys. But Sarah bears no interest in the conversation, and the girls reveal they lost their powers. After Sarah rejects their advances at friendship, the two girls snarkily suggest that Sarah must have lost her powers too. Sarah's response is to create lightning and almost kill the two with a giant tree branch that almost falls on them. Sarah tells Bonnie and Rochelle to be careful or they'll end up like Nancy, who is then revealed to be in a mental institution. Nancy squirms, telling the nurses she can fly, and they sedate her and leave Nancy to herself. And that's the end. Cut to black and some 90s music. And we're back. Oh my goodness. Now, this is interesting because The Craft is sort of like a we're going to watch it around Halloween time type movie.
Right.
But it came out in May of 1996. Mm-hmm. So take us back to the 90s, Dad. It's 1995. You're asked to work on this like teen movie that's sort of different than the norm at the time, right? Clueless had come out, and now there's like the opposite sort of version of that, which is like teen witches dealing with their problems together. Teen angst, which is so relevant today still.
Witchy teen angst.
How did it come about for you to be on the project first and foremost?
I think it was Ginny Nugent who reached out to us to get involved. I think she sent the script from the very beginning. And this is right when visual effects were just sort of starting to be something. So there were a lot of conversations about what's a makeup effect and what is potentially something that can be achieved with this newfangled creation, VFX. So the beginning of it was pretty interesting.
Yeah. Who's Jenny?
Ginny Nugent is now at HBO. She was a producer on this film, and she's an amazing person that is super creative and really smart.
Oh my gosh. Shout out Jenny from the block. I guess we should just go in kind of chronological order of what the effects are in the film. And I have some questions for you.
Yeah. And there were some effects that were done that were cut out of the final film too.
Oh, we definitely have to talk about that because I was trying to look up some, you know, behind the scenes type stuff. There wasn't a whole lot, but I didn't see, you know, I could be very wrong. I'm quite often wrong, but there could be some stuff like that of things that were cut and then they shared, but I haven't seen anything.
I've seen some stills, but I haven't seen any footage.
As we go through this movie, the very first practical gag, which I don't know actually if you did, was the homeless man getting ran over by the car.
Oh, yeah. That was all stunts. And
oh, that's stunts.
Yeah.
It's a very good dummy body.
Well, I think it was a stunt guy.
That they actually ran over?
I don't think they ran over him.
There's a shot. You see the car go over the body.
Yeah, I'm not sure how. We weren't on set for
that.
I couldn't tell you.
Couldn't tell
you. I'm glad it looks good, but I couldn't tell you.
The next thing we see is Neve Campbell's character, Bonnie. She has these scars. And before we get into how you made them, when I was watching the movie, I was like, oh, I wonder if they explain how she got them ever. And in the movie, we don't get that information. But that's key information you need as a makeup effects artist. So what did you have a conversation with the director of like how her character got burned and how long she was on fire for or something?
We talked about the fact that Neve had been burned as a younger kid, and that's what makes her self-conscious about the way she looks. She feels the burns are bigger than they are and cover more of her than they do. They're pretty extreme, but they're really mostly on her back. Andrew Fleming, the director, wanted the burns to not be raised and grotesque and like pulled tight. He wanted it to be almost, don't remember his exact words, but essentially have a little bit more of a feeling of grace to them and a bit of swirly, almost lacy sort of feel so that she's covered with it, but it's not necessarily aesthetically unappealing. It's just a condition that she has. So it wasn't like something that was supposed to make you feel like it was horrendous and that she was suffering, which I thought was a really cool thing, because later on when she's looking in the mirror and she's imagining what she looks like, she imagines herself with a very extreme, very theatrical Phantom of the Opera kind of burn.
Almost like Freddy Krueger.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah.
With like deep purples and really rich colors. It was supposed to be a whole nightmarish thing anyhow, with like thunder and lightning and all that. So it was really all about the drama there. But the reality was it covered her skin, but it didn't like pull it or pucker it. It was more of a surface covering. And then when she goes in for the experimental surgery, we had to build a back piece of her because they had this machine that was sort of on par with like a giant sewing machine.
Oh, on the set, like yeah, as part
actually,
of the movie?
Yeah, that actually punched a needle into the skin, sort of like a tattoo needle, but very slowly and very painful looking.
Yeah.
So we had this section, we created this whole false section of her back that they could show an extreme close-up. and punch, and the needle could punch into the skin.
That's
for that.
Awesome. That was a big question of mine, because it's such an extreme close-up and such detail. I'm like, damn.
It was nice because we used urethane. Back then, silicone didn't exist, which is what you'd use nowadays to make it look like translucent. The nice thing about urethane is it's translucent, but the bad thing is you can't do prosthetics with it because it doesn't stretch or give. And that's why we made a whole back so that they could shoot their close-up, but the frame could go out of focus and you could still see her back. And then we had a wig on a wig head, depending on what camera angle they were shooting at. We're always trying to be very aware of presenting it as a full piece, even though they were only seeing a little bit of it. We also did a matching prosthetic makeup on Nev, but that was foam latex because that was what existed at the time. And then we glossed the surface of it to make it look like the skin was shiny and constricted.
Interesting, because her back prosthetic, when it's actually Bonnie, the character, when I was watching it, I almost thought it was like liquid latex and you just did like layers of that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like because it's so, it's such a good job of being flesh with her back.
Yeah, it contours to her shape.
Yes.
Yeah, we did a life cast of her and then Dave Smith sculpted the prosthetic. And then when she goes through the treatment, there's a scene where they're wiping away
her scars.
Her scars. And what we did was we did two things. We used the prosthetic and we built up layers of Methasil on top of it and let it dry and crack and look like dried skin. And they could rub that with the texture underneath it. They could put something down on that and start to rub it. And then we did the same Methasil buildup on Nev's real back. And I think we just painted it slightly flushed. And then we did all the Methasil work. And then they could take that same, you know, wiping motion on her real back.
Wow.
And then actually wipe all that white flaky stuff away and reveal smooth kind of raw skin.
Yeah.
In one shot. Because again, VFX didn't really exist at the time.
Whoa. Methasil, is that the same thing that on the blob? Like,
yes.
Okay, so
that's how I remember that it dries and gets all crusty. And,
oh, it gets crusty. What's
and
the thing?
White.
What's the thing that never dries? That like Tar Man was covered in on Return of the Living Dead. Is that also?
Oh, there's a thing called Ultra Slime that stays kind of slimy forever.
Oh,
but
okay.
Methasil is a food additive, so it eventually dries out once the water is pulled from it. So if you do it in thin layers and hair dry it, it'll dry out really fast and you can build up thicker layers. You can also mix it really thick, but it's harder to sculpt sometimes when it's thicker. Because we were trying to like sculpt some of the shapes into it as it was drying.
Now, if you were to do that today, like that same makeup, but like silicone and stuff exists now, what, as far as like the Methasil technique, what is something?
I would probably do the same thing.
Really?
Yeah, because it was very effective and visual for what they were asking to do. I would change her burn prosthetic to a silicone prosthetic. Same for her face one and all that.
Oh, so if you're an SFX artist listening to this and getting into it, Methasil.
It's good for dried, cracked skin kind of stuff. And you put glue down underneath it even if you want and can get stuff to stick too.
It's so interesting, this movie, because the craft came out in May of 1996, and then later that year is Scream. And Neve Campbell had only done like television, I think, before this. So The Craft was her first like film role.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, how was it working with Neve Campbell?
She was great. I mean, they were all great. Robin Tunney, I think the only thing that was an issue was just the fact that Robin Tunney had come from a movie where she had to shave her head and her hair wasn't going to grow out in a month, so she was resigned to having to wear a wig, but the wig was fantastic and you know,
yeah,
she did a good job. But all of them were super into it.
That's cool.
Yeah, so it was really fun to work with them. I think we all really enjoyed the subject matter and we were in it to try and, you know, upgrade everything as much as we could.
It would have been cool though if she came in as like the fourth witch and she's like got a buzz cut. Yeah, that'd be pretty badass.
But that was
badass.
A very specific character in the film that she'd just come from. And
right.
They wanted all the witches to be a little softer, like normal school girls. So it wasn't like, oh, that one's the witch. I mean, Fairuza Balk's character is more dramatic, obviously, and that's, she's sort of the instigator and all that. But the other ones kind of get pulled into it. So the idea was have them be normal and get their life changed.
Were you on set very often?
I was on set when the makeup effects worked, and then when we had to do all the stuff with the sharks.
Yes.
At the beach, which...
I'm dressed, if you're listening to this, I am dressed as a shark. If you're watching this, you can see I'm a shark. So that's very exciting. When people are dressing up for Halloween, you know, I see a lot of people dress up as Nancy from The Craft.
Really?
Yeah, because she's got that cool 90s lipstick eyebrow.
Elizabeth Taylor.
Yeah, like look, which is pretty good. But I'm like, you can make that a couple's costume. Just have the other person be a shark. And Nancy and the sharks or snakes. You could get a whole gang together, guys.
It'd be a giant butterfly.
Yes, exactly. Make a big squad. Make a big witch squad.
There you go.
Yeah, so these are just free ideas for you to have this Halloween season, you know? So were you there when they did the big ritual on the beach or just the day after when all the dead sharks wash up on the ocean?
I think we were just there the day of the sharks.
Okay.
Yeah, we had to get there super early. They had to like lock off the beach.
Which beaches was this?
I forgot. I mean, the rocks are so distinguished and at the time it was such a specific place. And for the life of me right now, I don't recall.
That's okay. It takes place in LA, so it's some beach here.
Yeah, it was nearby. It was driving distance. But we had to like, you know, we'd built a bunch of sharks and we had to rent a U-Haul or two and drive them all out. We had some that were giant and then got to the beach early in the morning and realized that all of our sharks, if you just put them down, just sat on the sand like they were in water. They didn't, deflate or anything. So we had to dig out a pit under each one and sink it into the sand so that it looked like it had washed up and that sand had moved around it. So then we had to put sand around it and then pour water and get it to look like they were more integrated into the environment and had been there for a while, as opposed to just
someone plopped it on.
Somebody drove by and pushed it off the back of a pickup truck and, hey, look, shark.
Hey, there's a dead shark.
Yeah.
I mean, that's essentially what happened.
Yeah. And they wanted them all to be facing out too, like they were all making an effort to get out of the water. So they were all face out with the tails towards the back. And a shark's tail is vertical. So a couple of them, we had soft tails and we would bend them down so that it looked like gravity was working on them. And then the ones that had the stiffer tails, it was just so like distracting almost. We like made an effort to dig the sand deeper under the back ends of those so the tail would go down more into the, you know, the bottom fin would go down more into
right.
the sand. So it wasn't sticking out like a
sore thumb.
Yeah.
Sore shark fin.
It just seemed like there was too much straight up and down on a lot of them. So we really tried to make them look more integrated. And we were searching for like seaweed. Can we throw some seaweed around them or something to look like they'd washed up? But all the people were super respectful until wrap, I think. And then everybody wanted to come hang out by the sharks and see what was going on. Because one of them we'd done, it was monstrous. It was huge.
What kind of shark was it?
That was a great white.
But they got a great white?
But we did a great white. We did a hammerhead. We did a whole bunch of different sharks. I think they wanted to show that that the girls had control over all the sea. It wasn't just one species. And the sharks were supposed to be the most powerful. So the fact that they'd beached all these different kinds of sharks was supposed to be the reason.
That's interesting. So rather than like just fish or something like that, big fish, like it's the most powerful because Nancy's now on this like big power trip as a witch. Oh, that's really interesting, like storytelling that I wasn't thinking of when watching it. I think subliminally you feel that, but to hear that it was actually like really thought out is cool.
Yeah, yeah. Nelson Coates was a production designer and he was really getting into the nitty gritty of the details and making sure that everything felt very organic, because there's a lot of stuff with snakes and butterflies. And even the butterflies in the beginning, like we discussed making giant nets with fake butterflies attached to them that we could throw up and over the trees to get it to look like there were all these butterflies in the trees. And we were going to do what we did on Return of the Living Dead, which was have like a hard cardstock kind of butterfly folded over. And when the wind hits it, it looks like it's alive. So at one point, our budget breakdown, we had all these giant nets and smaller ones to like put over tree trunks and stuff like that to try and get a bulk of butterflies in one area really concentrated. And as visual effects were improving, you know, right off at the start of it, they started moving into
VFX.
Doing VFX with that. And there was a guy on our crew, Kevin Hudson, who was one of the makeup effects guys on the show. And he was following what Sony Digital was doing and said, I really want to give this a try. I'm going to go apply for a job there. So he went and he applied. And by the time the craft was over, he had actually worked on the craft as a visual effects artist, as well as being part of the makeup effects crew. I mean, it was growing that fast.
Wow.
And he got right into it. And he worked on some of the stuff where Nancy imagines her fingers turning into snakes.
Yeah.
And again, that's all really early stuff, but because it's supposed to be her insane vision, it gives you some artistic freedom to interpret how it moves and stuff like that. How would she imagine it moving?
Mm.
And I think that that made a lot of this stuff be able to move at a faster clip like that.
Yeah. Were there any actual butterflies on set? Like a butterfly wrangler?
Yeah, my understanding was that there was. We weren't on set for any of those days. I know on the days with the snakes, there was a snake wrangler. At one point, we were going to do an animatronic. I think we were going to actually do an animatronic hand with snake fingers. And then that ended up being the experiment that went to digital. And Kevin was part of the team that made it a success.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty cool.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And he's been in digital effects ever since.
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
To get back to the sharks of it all, you know, sort of like how in Return of the Living Dead, there was like this taxidermy poster of the anatomy of a dog that helped you. Because I would like to remind everybody, especially Gen Z and Alpha, that this is the 90s. You can't just Google weird shit on your computer.
There's no internet.
Yes.
There's no computer.
There's no computer, guys. So how do you go about making an anatomically correct dead shark?
Well, we would go get like magazines and books and stuff like that from the library or wherever, and we'd copy photos, or we would just, if we bought a magazine, we would just tear the photos out and pin them up as reference. But we got measurements from some scientific books, and then we just graphed it out on a big piece of paper and then created an armature and put rigid foam over that. Sculpted the bulk of the shark body in rigid foam, and then textured that and molded it. So we had a fiberglass mold of a shark, so then we could create multiple copies. But there's also taxidermy companies that have forms that you could use as a starting point as well. So it wasn't all that complicated. It was just, you know, getting good reference and then getting really clear direction from the director and production designer as to what they wanted to see.
Yeah. How were they heavy?
No, actually, they were all pretty either hollow fiberglass or rigid foam and fiberglass. Like there's a picture of me hauling one of the hammerheads, I think with one arm.
Yes.
I mean, you can tell it's pretty light. You know, it's a smaller shark of all of them. But we did have one or two that were pretty hefty. And I think we threw one into the water after we were done to see if it would actually, because it was heavy, to see if it would actually float or not. And it just kept rolling back and forth on the water. It didn't go under at all. So there's some lost opportunity out there for somebody to make a flotation device that looks like a shark.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
scare a lot of people.
Because it was pretty funny. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. There's this picture of my dad from the craft that is one of my favorite photos ever that exists of my dad. Like he's saying, he has one arm around this hammerhead shark and his like long hair is flowing in the wind. And it just looks like if it was like Pamela Anderson, you know, in Baywatch, like slow motion, my dad's just there with his like long hair, like, you know, but you don't know that it's a fake shark if you're just looking at it. So
true.
He's just like one arm carrying this big hammerhead shark.
Yeah.
Like you would have no idea.
I think I had my other arm on the hammer, on the eye. So hopefully somebody figured it out.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, wait a minute. But yeah. that's such a good photo, which, by the way, we are going to try to recreate after this podcast episode. Fun fact, my dad's going to hold me since I'm a shark. It's going to be great.
Yes.
But that's such a fun behind the scenes photo. Did you name any of the sharks?
We did not. I think we had one that was hefty.
Because it was pretty hefty.
Yeah. But I think that was pretty much it.
I saw something online sort of, you know, about how movies, depending on the subject matter, can be, you know, like Poltergeist had so many things go haywire. There was something that was mentioned about sort of like odd things happening on the set of The Craft.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Did you ever experience?
We didn't experience any of that. I would have enjoyed that, but we didn't experience any of that.
Yeah. That's why I was asking if you were at the ritual on the beach thing, because the director was saying, he said something to the effect of
about the weather.
Yeah. The tides were messing up the set. And even though the wave wasn't actually coming in, the ocean, like probably the spray, kept putting out the fire, their bonfire. Oh,
okay.
And then I think one rogue wave like took out the whole set.
Wow. Okay. When the girls go into this candle shop, the magic shop, the lady who runs it at one point lets them into the back of the shop, and it was filmed in Hollywood at the end of Kingsley Drive, where we lived, oddly enough. There was a store, and next to it there was this weird apartment that was all stucco and stuff, and it went back and around a corner, and they turned that into the set for this particular scene where the shop owner reveals her mother, who is the sort of like the ultimate witch. And it was Lupe Ontiveros, who was probably in her 50s. And we aged her up to like 100 with like, you know, scarred white lenses. And she was blind and she had all her hair pulled back in a gray bun. And she was like predicting and foretelling things. And she was working a loom in the middle of this clearing. And everybody said that whole area felt really creepy working there. But we didn't really have that experience. But that's the scene that was cut out of the movie in entirety. When they go behind the curtain, this whole other world opens up. And
Okay, so the scene that's cut out from The Craft is they go behind the curtain and Sarah's supposed to see.
It's literally supposed to be the shop owner's mom, who is the one that has the ultimate magic. And she's blind, but she sees everything. And she's creating stuff on a loom. Even though she can't see what she's doing, she's basically weaving fabrics and telling stories and weaving stories.
Oh.
And there were like all these really cool layers to it. And Lupe was really into it and it was really fantastic. And that whole scene went away.
Did they ever say why?
No, not to any degree that,
you know,
made us feel good.
Oh, yeah, they cut your work out. I wonder, you know, what's interesting is that scene stood out to me when I was watching it. You know, it had been a while as I was rewatching it, and Sarah and the shop owner go to the back, and then what ends up happening is her mom comes to life in the photo, and she's like, "Your mom was a witch too. You didn't know?" And she's like, "No." And then they like feel Nancy's presence or whatever, like she's coming to get them. And then there's like an explosion, but it's not real. And then she like leaves. And
that whole thing was truncated. And I think it was ultimately it was to try and keep things more mysterious and not have a concrete person or entity or answer, and have the whole idea of Manon and everything else being bigger than what we'd filmed. For us, it was the first time we did a really extreme old age makeup. And it's foam latex and it was really difficult. We did her balding and we'd punched all the hair for her wispy gray hair. It was kind of pulled back into a bun. She was so good in the part. It was more disappointing for her to not have screen time. But it's one of those things that maybe footage will surface someday.
Yeah.
We've got stills. I mean, you can show stills on this.
Okay.
Podcast.
Check out the video version of this if you're listening to it, so you can see these photos. That's wild.
Yeah.
I've probably stumbled across these but then didn't know what it was from because that scene's cut.
It's gone, yeah.
So when she so what does her character add that's not there? So it's bigger than just Sarah's mom being a witch. It's this lady's also a witch. Is there something about that strikes me as like something about maternal, you know, like our mom, you know, that's no coincidence that it's an all female cast and all the women are witches. So that kind of solidifies a more like maternal.
I guess it would be the one that leading the coven ultimately, if it was, if that was the structure of it. So in Hocus Pocus, it's like the mother witch kind of thing. There's the one source of stuff. She was kind of the source.
Interesting.
And but I think they wanted the source to be bigger than just this person. So.
And that was the only time in all the cut footage was her scene, just that one scene.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah.
It's supposed to be the big reveal and then there is no reveal.
Yeah. And so was there always that, like at the end of that scene with the shop owner's mom, what was Sarah supposed to feel, you know, Nancy coming in?
Well,
then?
They talked to her. They talked to the old lady. In the scene.
Right.
I mean, they have conversations about stuff.
So how did it end? They're just like, bye. Thank you so much.
They change their mind and it ends the way it does now.
Where then there's a random window explosion that's not real?
Yeah.
Oh, weird. Yeah. Maybe that would have made more sense with whatever the I'm calling her grandma for some reason. whatever the mother was going to say.
Yeah, I don't recall what the dialogue was. I don't think she spoke English, and I think her daughter translated for her.
That's actually really cool.
Yeah, I know. There were a lot of really cool layers to it. And the production design was amazing with all the candles and all the stuff and the whole little courtyard. I don't know how he made it happen in the space that he did. But that made it all that much more magical. It's like the curtains parted, and you're like in this area that didn't make sense that actually fit. But you felt like you were almost outdoors. At the same time, so it was very bizarre.
That's really cool. Now I'm trying to imagine the movie with that scene in, and I'm like, oh, I really want to see the deleted scenes, guys. If somebody finds this on the internet, please tell us. Oh, yeah, random fun fact. When they do their little ritual on the beach, it's she says it's like on the eve of May or something like that, and then the movie came out in May.
Oh.
So maybe that's why. Because all these like Halloween-y type movies coming out in springy summer.
I don't think it was perceived as so much a Halloween movie. I think
it's true. You know, it's teenage.
They're in, and I mean technically they're supposed to be in school.
Yeah, they did not do a lot of schooling.
They in summer school?
No, they're just really bad at going to class. They just ditch. Yeah. And then there's like those lines that are iconic now when they get on the bus and then they're leaving.
We are the weirdos.
Yeah, he's like, look out for those weirdos. We are the weirdos, Mister.
Yeah,
it's like, ooh, okay, girl.
Yeah. Faruza really owned that part. She was truly amazing.
Yeah, I read online that she actually is a Wiccan or just really knew a lot about that.
There used to be a store on Coinga Boulevard called Panpipes, and it was Wiccan stuff and witchcraft related and just that sort of immersive environment. And I think, I'm not sure if she was going there prior to the film, but after the film was over, she bought it and she owned it for a while. She was like, I don't know if she owned it entirely or was a co-owner, but it was kind of cool to see her be so involved, immersed in the stuff through the course of the film and then actually have this conduit for her to share the stuff with other people. I thought that was pretty neat. And then we just drove past it a couple nights ago, and I think it's a tobacco store now. It's just gone.
Yeah. And it's like really old.
The building?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, so that's like sad to see it just turn into a smoke shop.
Yeah.
But, you know, c'est la vie.
Yeah.
Speaking to Faruza, I'm jumping ahead a little bit in the chronologicalness of the story, but she ends up in a mental institution.
At the end.
Yes, and there's all these cuts on her face. Did you guys do that?
No, that was all regular makeup department.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't think we really helped on that.
Did you do anything directly with her?
No.
Okay, you
just all hypnotized by her, basically.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, she's very charismatic.
Yeah, and she comes back in the sequel.
Does she?
Yeah, she's, I think, at the, spoilers, at the very end, the new witches or whatever, there's one that goes to, I can't remember, I only watched it once, goes to the insane asylum, and she's, like, still there, but she's today years old.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's, you know, I like the original.
Yeah, it's a great film, and the cast is fantastic. Everybody really inhabited their part and really invested in it.
Yeah.
And I think it comes across on screen.
Absolutely. It's also one of those weird things, a trigger warning, talking about some serious topics now, but it's, and we're going to be YouTube friendly word verbiage here, but it's so interesting. I had no idea that there was so much talk about unaliving and sewer sliding in a teen movie. It's kind of crazy. And then also Christine Taylor's character being such a racist.
Oh, she was so good.
Oh my goodness, yeah. Gracious.
So nice in person, and then on screen she's just
saying the N-word, you know?
Yeah.
That's nuts.
She's just a really good actress.
But I mean, that is absolutely a real thing that happens.
Yeah, there's people like that.
Regardless of being in high school or not, it definitely happens. But I just did not remember all of that in that movie. I was so shocked when she said that.
She's the main character that gets her comeuppance. You know, she's all about vanity and everything. So
yeah,
the spell against her with her hair falling out and her head looking all diseased and stuff.
Yes.
It was very fitting for her and something that she couldn't get away from.
Walk us through like the hair loss practical
effects.
It was effects.
Really pretty basic. I mean, we did a life cast of her, pulled all her hair back as tight as we could get it, did a life cast, and then created a prosthetic of her scalp, and then and it covered everything all the way to the back. We let her own hair go down the back of it behind her so that everything could stay as tight and to scale as possible, because we wanted the hair that was left on her head to be really thin in spots and not look like there's any extra mass, because she had long hair. We did a bald cap, essentially, that was a foam latex bald cap, and it was sculpted with bumps and just little diseasey areas on it. And then we painted all that up and punched. We laid hair on the back that would blend into her real hair. And then we, I think, had some lace pieces. And then we punched the whole front part of it so that we could make the hairs really sparse and come out in weird directions. And then when she's in the shower scene, we added extra pieces of hair on top of that were not glued down. And we just used the water basically to, you know, hold it in place so she could grab it. You could see it on her head flat from water, and then she could grab it and pull on it and pull stuff out and have it string between her fingers and the hair that was on her head. It sort of gave an arena for this webbing to take place on camera. And then we did it, I think, kind of subtly one or two times just to make sure we had it, and then loaded it up, and she just really started pulling stuff out and crying, and it was just powerful to watch her do that. And it really said so much about her character without having to say anything.
Yeah.
It was pretty great. But it was pretty straightforward for us. And then we took that same idea, and when Sarah goes after the other two, you know,
Rochelle and Bonnie.
Yes. It goes after those two and sort of is pushing into their minds an image to them of how messed up they could actually really be. And they're seeing in a mirror their own reflection of sort of a heightened reality of what Sarah is sort of pushing on them. She's kind of influencing their vision, basically. And so Nev's character sees her face really extremely burned on one half, very Phantom of the Opera, super theatrical. And then the other character, we did the same gag with the bald cap over her hair, but her hair was a lot harder to mat down.
Yeah.
Because she had such a thick, healthy head of hair. But we did a bald cap, and we were doing blisters and bumps and boils that were a lot more three-dimensional. We were painting them up, so it was a lot more theatrical. And we left more of her real hair exposed around the back and just focused more on the top, where you could see it more in the mirror. And then there was stuff that she could pull out of that as well.
Yeah.
So, but again, all 90 whatever is all foam latex, but it worked fine. And then the lighting for that was theatrical, and we did their real makeup a little more theatrical as well. So it's just kind of a nightmare scene, basically.
Yeah.
And then it, you know, flashes back to normal, and
they're
all
fine.
That stuff's gone, and you realize it was all in their head.
Yeah, it's so interesting. The other two witches, Bonnie and Rochelle, is like they're, you know, Nancy sort of just like wants power and stuff like that. And Bonnie's like, I just don't want my scars. And Rochelle's like, I just don't want to deal with a racist biatch. And when it comes back times three, I guess it's because they get sucked into it too deep with Nancy. But yeah. I'm just like, dang, all she really wanted was to like just go to, they just wanted to go to school and not be bullied.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, but then they turned into the bullies. And then they all like basically are just trying to get Sarah to like unalive herself. It's crazy.
Yeah. And aggressive too.
Aggressive. Yeah. You know, and I guess Nancy says in the olden days with witches, if someone like broke stuff with their coven, they'd kill them. So I guess that makes sense. But I was just like, damn, y'all are going real hard.
It's a rough crowd.
Yeah, it's a rough, it's a really rough crowd. It's a rough coven. But I think that's really interesting what you were saying about Bonnie's scars too, of like how you were working with the director to make them more flatten and things like that, like the talking about the lace thing and it not really being this this big like egregious burn.
Right.
Hearing that is so, it's almost, you know, poetic when it turns into the nightmare sequence, because we really see ourselves, we're our like harshest critic, and she sees herself as this big ugly thing, but in the reality is it's like it's not terrible, and it's really, it is really just to on her back.
And she actually, it's funny because now that we're talking about it, she actually had a little bit on the side of her neck, and that's why she keeps her hair down.
Oh,
you literally never see it, so you never know.
No,
but that's sort of to her the representation of everybody can see what's wrong with me.
Oh, wow.
So when she gets cured, her hair goes up.
Because she can finally...
And you can see all of her, but she's really all about covering herself up.
That's interesting. Yeah, because you see it. She has a big coat. She has turtlenecks. She has her hair down. But then when she comes to school the next day, because I never knew they were on her neck, I don't, just because she covers up so much. And then when she's at the doctor, it's really focused on her back.
Yeah.
And so when she comes to school, she's in a t-shirt. And I'm like, you should have put her in a spaghetti strap so we could really see her skin. Because most, what we know as the audience is her backside. So like that would be a little bit more revealing, but that makes sense if it was also on her neck. Wow. Did you get to see any of the like bugs and the snakes and the maggots?
No, I would really have liked to have been there for that day.
They
said there was a lot going on that day and they really want to keep it controlled.
That's fair. So. You also don't want to like spook all the animals.
Yeah. And it went great. Apparently, you know, everything, the whole film was really smooth, I guess, other than that one day where they couldn't keep a fire lit on the beach.
Yeah.
But other than that.
That's okay. That's regular schmegular movie problems. Yeah.
I think the music's really good. The lighting's fantastic. I just feel like it has something great to say. It was one of those films that you really enjoy getting to be a part of. Aww. And to see people like pulling it out at Halloween time now as part of, you know, even on that ABC like 30 days of Halloween, they'll show The Craft now, which is really interesting because I'm curious as to how they've edited some of that stuff.
Oh.
But it's, you know, it's got a lot more viewing in recent years than it has in a long time.
Really?
Yeah.
How did you feel the reception was at the time, like when it came out in theaters? I'm sure people
I thought it was good.
Yeah, because I feel like people were probably... shitting themselves that because also not only the practical effects but also the VFX when Sarah's character or when Nancy like makes herself look like Sarah. Oh my gosh, like
changes the
face.
Yeah.
Did people just, or did even after like, you know, you worked on that movie but you're probably not there that day when they did that, did you watch that and go, oh my god?
Yeah, there was some really creative stuff in it that hadn't been done, so it was cool to see.
That's pretty cool.
And be associated with too was kind of obviously cool.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else you want to add about this movie?
I guess I found it really interesting watching all the lead actresses work together to create this tight-knit group and give each other space and support each other at the same time to push themselves and do things that, you know, maybe they hadn't done before. And I thought everybody rose to the challenge really well. But the whole thing was so well organized. Doug Wick's group and Nelson Coates' production design team, everything, you'd walk on set and it was sort of an immersive kind of thing. And then to have everybody on in front of the camera be so committed at the same time, it was just cool.
That's really cool. That's all you can ask for.
There was no stress ever. It was really well organized.
Wow.
At least on the days we were there.
Yeah.
I don't know what the other days were.
Yeah. The fire's going out. Yeah. And who knows? That's really cool.
Yeah.
Aw. Well, on that lovely note, thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of our Flesh and Blood and Bone podcast. As I get further into post-production for my movie Slay, I hope to bring you more episodes and be a little bit more consistent, and also bring back some guests. We are looking to do an episode on the movie Freaky with guests Michael Kennedy and Chris Landon. So be sure to tune in for that. And if there's anything you'd like us to cover or any guests you'd like to try and have on our podcast, let us know.
Yeah, that'd be great.
We hope you all start decorating for Halloween in August, and we'll see you next month in September. Bye. Thank you.
Bye.